This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 19th of June 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today I'm joined by Tim Robey, film critic for The Telegraph, who knows what to see and what to avoid this weekend at the cinema. On our hit list this week, we have Sir Ian McKellen as a retired Sherlock in Mr. Holmes, at London Road, the musical that's been transposed for the screen by Rufus Norris and deals with the Ipswich murders of 2006. And finally, we find out why David O. Russell has removed his name from new rom-com Accidental Love, which revolves around a nail stuck in Jessica Biel's head. That's all to come on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome to the show, Tim. Great to have you with us as ever. Let's start with a new British film out this week called London Road. This sees the National Theatre's artistic director Rufus Norris in the director's chair as the 2011 musical hits the big screen. We've got Olivia Colman, who else, in it, a cameo from Tom Hardy. This film documents the murders that rocked Ipswich in East England in 2006 when the bodies of five women were discovered in the town. The man who was later convicted of their killings was a resident on London Road. Tim, how's this story handled? Obviously on the stage it was a musical production, which surprised people. This goes onto the big screen. Is that a transition, I guess, that works?
It does and it doesn't. Rufus Norris, the director who's kind of brought his own production to the screen here, had made another film already. He made Broken a few years ago with Cillian Murphy and Tim Roth, which I didn't think worked as a debut, and was also weirdly about kind of young girls being abused. This one is the musical of the Ipswich murders, and that in itself is a very strange thing to take on board. I mean, of course, like Sweeney Todd is a musical about a serial killer, and that kind of works in a Blackly comic way. This doesn't have anything like that focus, because you don't see any of the killings or the killer, in fact, at all during the film. It's entirely about the community and their kind of net curtain twitching sort of response to what's going on up and down the street. The thing that really is good, I think, is the score. It's really clever. It's taken from verbatim interviews with various people in the community, residents, talking about how they responded as the story evolved and as the killer was put on trial. And exact snippets of what they're saying have been kind of turned into the basis for the score. So you have the entire community saying things like, everybody's very, very, very nervous, and very unsure of everything. And the kind of rhythms of their speech are really very cleverly replicated in the lyrics. And it's a very unusual and interesting score. And I think the film, because Rufus Norris is very familiar with this material and kind of brought it to life on stage so well, the film does that aspect of things really quite well, I think. I think that the music, the kind of musical numbers, such as they are, work really well. The cast are very dedicated. Olivia Colman takes over the lead role from Kate Fleetwood, who played it on stage and who actually plays a different role in the film. She plays one of the prostitutes.
Well, we'll talk a bit more about the performances in a moment. Let's have a little listen first up. This is an extract from London Road.
This is London Road, where a suspect was arrested.
And all I can see were police cars going up the road.
And of course, you know,
I must have been in charge of something to do with these.
Pulled off!
Button!
And that's when it all started, it all kicked off.
I'm outside number 79. And I thought, oh no.
The ubiquitous Olivia Colman. How does Olivia measure up? Because she, you know, impresses across, you know, comedy, lighthearted drama, everything. She seems to be very, you know, capable at reinventing herself. Is this a good sort of forum for her talents?
I think she's really good in it, really good in it. And one of the things that works is that she's talking to camera. She's kind of talking to the audience. And we sort of trust Olivia Colman. She's so sympathetic. There's kind of a sadness to her, even in the comedy, I think. You kind of believe everything she's saying. And that makes this role very interesting for her to play, because the character emerges as one of the most conservative and judgmental and rather pernicious people on the street. I mean, there's a moment late on where she reveals she kind of thinks the killer was doing the whole community a favour.
Well, I was going to ask you about this because it's one of the really striking things about the stage play was this sense that you anticipate a lot of sympathy and empathy from these characters. You think that's what you're going to see because of the nature of the story, but actually it's rather bleaker than that in terms of what it says about people's reaction to when these things happen within their communities.
It's very bleak, and I do think that casting her is kind of a masterstroke, because you do feel as though you're going to get this sympathetic point of view, and then it turns, kind of sours on you. But one thing that bothers me a little bit about the whole piece actually is, and verbatim theatre kind of generally, is that, you know, you get given all these points for authenticity, that you're using people's real words and their real speech patterns, and you're kind of telling it like it is, but you're being incredibly selective with the little chunks of speech that you've taken from these hours and hours and hours of interviews. And it feels like cherry picking in a way. It feels like, aha, we can nail them here for this NIMBYist, not in my backyard attitude. She said this one thing, it slipped out. Okay, brilliant. We're going to build an entire number around that, or get Olivia to turn that into the kind of, you know, the pivotal moment of her whole performance. And it feels like you can sort of slightly unfairly nail an entire community, an entire town for these attitudes just by doing that. And I think that the text of the show is a little bit guilty of that, I must say.
And I wonder, does it help to, if we sort of ask a big question, does it help to understand, you know, what happened in Ipswich any better? Does it help to explain 21st century provincial Britain, or does it not? Does it not even seek to address those?
I don't really think it helps us that much, because it's not telling us anything particularly surprising. I mean, the kind of themes it's touching on are things like, you know, it's not all that surprising, perhaps, that pensioners might not want kind of prostitutes up and down their own street. And this is not a big reveal. This is not a shocking thing for us to discover. And I think it's sort of hammering at those themes quite obviously, really. And I'd preferred a more sympathetic portrait of the community. And I think I'd have preferred a bigger role for the prostitutes within the film. I mean, they get a sort of a set of scenes, but they're really quite marginalised within it. And, I mean, you sort of see they've deliberately done that to kind of register the marginalisation of those people in the community. But I think really they should be the kind of focus of it. And at the end of the film, when you get the actual voices of the actual prostitutes coming in, and in the sort of scratchy audio that it was recorded on, that's when it actually really has some emotional resonance. For the rest of the time, when you've got the actors doing a very clever job of doing that in the song score, you sort of think, well, that's sort of clever and diverting,
something,
and they've done a nice job.
But it's lost in translation.
There's a disjunct from reality, basically.
That's London Road. You can judge for yourselves. It's in UK cinemas right now. Let's move on to Mr. Holmes, which tells the story of Sherlock as a retired detective trying to grapple with his fading memory to solve one last mystery. Always a nice sort of narrative point. It's based on a novel by Mitch Cullen called A Slight Trick of the Mind, and stars the great Sir Ian McKellen. Tim, let's have a little listen to this first up.
What possible motive could that German woman have had to kill Anne? That night, I searched for something to jog my memory of the actual case. And there it was, a picture.
You know, a few years ago, I could have told you everything about the woman in that photograph.
Certainly, I'd recall what had become of her, whether she was victim or culprit.
But that night, I couldn't remember any of it. All I knew for certain was that the case was my last, and it was why I left the profession, came down here.
Ian McKellen in Mr. Holmes. I guess one of the first questions, Tim, for this would be, is this a film about, you know, the final case? Or is it a film about Sherlock Holmes grappling with his fading memory, his advancing years? He's supposed to be a very old man, obviously, in this story.
Yeah, it is both those things, but it's also about Sherlock Holmes kind of grappling with his own legend, in a way, and putting the record straight. One of the things I really do like about it, it's splendidly performed, this film, and very enjoyable. But one of the really nice, clever things about it is how he's very grumpy about the way he's been presented in the past. And he kind of blames Dr. Watson for kind of bigging him up and kind of giving him all the catchphrases and the deerstalker and all this nonsense that he thinks is completely exaggerated, and has kind of distorted what his actual powers of perception are. And there's a great scene where he goes to see a film from the 40s of his exploits, and kind of scoffs at how ridiculous it is and how kind of completely mannered it's become. And it's a great little sequence, actually. It's a bit like one of the Basil Rathbone films from that era. But they have in the role of sort of Holmes in the film within the film, they have Nicholas Rowe, who played Holmes in Young Sherlock Holmes. So it's a lovely little kind of meta riff there. And it's a film that I think fans of Holmes and the kind of Holmesiana will really enjoy. It's very gently paced, though. So I think that, you know, big fans of the Cumberbatch TV series will kind of come away perhaps a little bit perplexed, and that the case that he's tackling in it, the final case, as it were, is sort of strangely throwaway, involves bees, and it's kind of quite gentle and sweet, and it's sort of an old man's mystery, really. But there's lots to enjoy in it.
And what about the visual style of the piece, because a few of the reviewers have mentioned it's quite handsome. You already suggested that, and it's sort of, I don't know, a heritage style, sort of traditional look almost to the piece.
Yeah, it is sort of elegiac. It's got a sort of handsome sort of Britishness to it. It's set on the coast, and it gives you that kind of nice, kind of warm feeling of a British film set on the coast. I think it's sort of, I don't want to say that it's a film for your gran, because that's a little bit unfair, because I think it's a film for anyone who's really absorbed themselves in Conan Doyle's work over the years. But it is refreshing to see one that is kind of grappling in a not too sort of antsy and kind of over cranked up way with the pleasures of reading Conan Doyle. My problem with the BBC series is I just think it's so hyper-edited that you kind of lose a bit of his personality. Mm. And here the personality is brought back, and he's actually exploring, he's thinking about his own character, really, and, as you say, slipping into senility. So we're kind of dealing with the whole measure of the man.
And there's a thoughtfulness, I guess, as well, sometimes with the TV versions that's lost, a bit of that slower pace. And McKellen obviously captures that. It's a subtle performance, as we'd expect from one of the sort of, you know, the grand old men of stage and screen, really.
Yeah, it's very subtle and very grand at the same time. He's one of those actors who can do both. You know, you're reminded a bit of what he brought to Gandalf, I suppose, in that there's that kind of authority there, but there's also a kind of minute subtlety, which is really compelling to watch. And the voice, my goodness, he really does sound like he's been sort of gargling honey for 50 years.
You said it was about bees.
There is a bit of that in there. And Laura Linney comes into it as well. She's starred before. It's directed by Bill Condon, who directed her in Kinsey and also in the Fifth Estate, the movie about Julian Assange. She pops up, and she's this kind of landlady who takes in Holmes and is kind of becomes sort of his companion in a completely platonic way. And her son, who's actually gives a very good performance as well, is his sort of little protege, who he's kind of teaching the tricks of not only detection but particularly beekeeping. That it's sort of Holmes decides he's actually was really meant to be a beekeeper all along rather than a detective.
That's Mr. Holmes, which is out in British cinemas now and in other European countries, as well as the USA and Australia later on in July. Tim, let's finish by, I must admit, I've been rather looking forward to talking to you about this, with a rom-com. That's not the reason why. It's Accidental Love, the story of a waitress played by Jessica Biel, who undergoes something of a personality makeover after she's shot in the head by a nail gun. She heads to Washington, D.C. to campaign for those with bizarre injuries like hers, with the support of a congressman played by Jake Gyllenhaal. And here's the rub. David O. Russell directs under the pseudonym Stephen Green. And perhaps that's the starting point. Why a pseudonym? Why did he, as we understand it, request for his name to be removed from this project?
Well, the story behind this film is almost as bizarre as the story in it, and that is deeply bizarre. You know, she spends the entire movie with a nail deep in her brain. The story of it is that it was shot back in like 2006, 2007, this film. It was shot after David O. Russell had made I Heart Huckabees, which was not a big commercial success, although actually a film that I think has got now a bit of a cult following. And in this one, he decided, right, I'm going to tackle healthcare. So it's all about healthcare. It's about America failing its needy, essentially. And it's about the fact that because she's uninsured, she cannot find anyone to remove this thing from her head without paying $150,000. They shot most of the movie, which is kind of extraordinarily weird tonally. I mean, the script is sort of all over the place. There are bits of it that work. There are bits of it that don't work at all. There are all kinds of minor characters kind of dropping in and out. But they failed to finish it. They basically ran out of money before they reached the finish line. And the producers were so worried about the way it was shaping up that they sort of took it away and basically decided we don't really know what we're going to do with this. We haven't got the final scene that we need shot. They kind of dropped the ball on it, essentially. Mm. David O. Russell then moved on with his career and decided just to kind of put the whole calamity behind him and reinvented himself.
Which he did incredibly
Which he did very successfully with The Fighter and then Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle, and he's now kind of a real force again. Meanwhile, the producers decide, what are we going to do with this thing? And they sort of reassemble a cut of it that they want, which he doesn't want anything to do with. So he decides, right, I'm just abandoning this altogether. I'm taking my name off it. So it emerges on screen as this kind of Frankenstein's monster with kind of bits of his ideas kind of cobbled together and bits edited out. The performances are very uneven and strange. There are little chunks that work. I mean, the strangest thing about it is what a time capsule it is politically, because it's pre-Obamacare, so it's entirely about trying to push through this impossible dream of socialized healthcare, and everyone in the film is kind of satirizing how absurd it is to even contemplate getting something like that through Congress. And of course, Obama got halfway to doing so. So now it's completely dated and kind of odd to watch it, because you're like, well, we've kind of halfway dealt with this now.
So is it a sort of a curio, an entertaining piece for critics like yourself who can compare and contrast with these other weird abortive movie efforts, because they crop up, don't they, through history, these movies that stay on the shelf, or there's a battle and they emerge with an Alan Smithy credit because no one wants to take responsibility, or does it have a legitimate mass market interest for people?
I don't think it has a mass market interest. I think it's purely kind of an instructive failure in a way. I mean, it's not boring. You're sort of going through it thinking, which turn is it going to take next? And, I think Jake Gyllenhaal actually has some real energy in it, and Jessica Biel is trying very hard. But it's not a case
It's slightly damning with faint praise, isn't
it?
She's doing her best.
She really is. She's giving it a good shot. It's sort of the biggest part that she's had. I mean, we haven't seen her in a lead role since this film. You wonder if it was that damaging to her career. But it's no Margaret, which was the film that Kenneth Lonergan made 6 years before it was released with Anna Paquin, which I think is kind of a masterpiece, and which he finally was given the chance to finish and kind of pull together. It's certainly not in that category. It's much more of a kind of, like, a messed up, broken film that's finally trickled out into screens, and you'll kind of get to see everything that went wrong. It has a certain kind of car crash value to it without being completely without any comic inspiration. I think David O. Russell still has these kind of, his brain is still firing off ideas in every scene, and kind of one in four of them work here.
Well, you can judge for yourselves how successful, unsuccessful that is. Accidental Love has already landed in selected Asian and American cinemas and is out in the UK today. That brings us to the end of today's programme. Thanks very much, Tim, for being with us. That's Tim Robey. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks to Holly Fisher, our producer, our researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. And do join us at the same time next Monday for the lowdown on this year's North Sea Jazz Festival in Rotterdam. Until then, it's goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.